I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. So I hope you're all doing well. This episode was recorded during lockdown. It was recorded over Zoom. And today's guest is comedian, author, and podcaster extraordinaire, James Acaster. And what I now know about James, he's also as much of an anorak for music as me. So you're in for a treat. We've had a smashing chat, which we will get on to in a moment. But before, just want to say thank you to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Big thanks to 76 for producing this podcast. If this is your first Off the Beaten Track podcast you've listened to, then why not go and have a little rummage around in the archives, because there's a bundle of goodies in there from other comedians, loads of musicians and producers and actors. Go and have a little look in the back catalogue and see if anything takes your fancy. Also, if you've listened to all of them and you're still wanting some more, then I have a Patreon page as well, so you can go over there and I put up loads of exclusive episodes and content over there each week. I think we're done. I think I can get on with the episode. So it gives me great pleasure to say, please enjoy Off the Beaten Track Podcast with James Acaster. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing, www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year. And they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All of the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fair Wear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk. Official sponsors of Off the Beaten Track Podcast. Let's get back to that podcast. It's Off the Beaten Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin. Right, we're recording. Sitting opposite me today via the means of Zoom. We're recording this one in the quarantine that we're finding ourselves in. It's James Acaster. Hello.
Hey, mate. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. We've just touched on the fact that we've never met. We've got lots of mutual friends.
Yeah.
In the shape of Scroobius Pip and Rich Wilson and Jade Adams,
yeah,
and Mr. Goldstein. And it's great that I finally got round to meeting you, and you're going to talk music, which is my favourite thing to do as well.
Thank you so much for having me on. Yeah, talking about music even now more than ever is just the greatest. Like, I love it anyway, but like during lockdown, it's brilliant.
Have you found yourself listening to more music then?
Okay, yeah, I kind of obsessively listen to music a lot anyway, and maybe I'd be interested to know if I have listened to more or less, because normally I spend most of my time travelling around as a comic, and also living in London in general. You're most of the time on the tube and whatever, so like I'm constantly listening to stuff normally on headphones and walking around, and so I don't know if I've like listened to more or less stuff in the lockdown. I've definitely had more kind of like sitting down and listening to things and taking the time to like put a record on and listen to it and relax, rather than just constantly listen to it in my headphones sitting in the back of an Uber or whatever. So I'm paying attention to it more when I do listen to it. I feel more connected to it and more like I'm engaging with it more.
Well, before we actually get on with the playlist then, I just want to touch on something that you said then in regards to, you said you sit down and you put on a record. Mm-hmm. Is that, I mean, when you're in a cab and you've got your headphones on, is that generally sort of playlists and things like that, or do you try and listen to an album as a body of work?
Yeah, I think my favorite way to listen to music is an album just all the way through and appreciate the whole thing and really get into it and let it grow on you and go over and over. But like I think I have to have like little breaks in between that, where sometimes like, I make a playlist because I was fancy making a playlist and it's very satisfying to listen to it. Yeah. It tends to be playlists that I've made that I listen to. I don't really listen to other people's playlists, which is, you know, weird, because really that's what playlists, the purpose they serve is to recommend new music to people. But I just enjoy listening to my favourite songs in one after the other. But yeah, and like sometimes I get really obsessed with one song and I'll just listen to it over and over. During the lockdown, I had like 2 days where I was obsessed with Transdermal Celebration by Ween and couldn't stop listening to it, because I've started watching these YouTube reaction videos by guitar teachers and drum teachers and stuff. And this is one guy, this very charismatic fella, was watching this Ween song. I hadn't heard it before, and just seeing how good the song was, but also his genuine first reaction to it, and he's getting excited and trying to learn the solo, and his enthusiasm was infectious, and couldn't stop listening to it for quite a while.
Okay, well, let's start the track list. So for track one, please, James. I mean, I don't know your answers, so I'm intrigued, and I mean the fact that we're already talking about Ween, I think we're going to be in for a good chat. So for track one, please, James, the song with the greatest ever intro.
Yeah. So, very difficult. It's a very good question. I was torn between, like, you know, short intros, long intros. I really have a lot of respect for long intros that have a lot of, like, climbing guitars and stuff. And the ultimate version of that, I think, is a song called Throw Down the Sword by Wishbone Ash, who are a band that I like because my dad likes them. My dad got so he'll be happy about this, but like Argus by Wishbone Ash is like this kind of cult classic record, and my dad would play it around the house a lot, and I think it's the final song on it is Throw Down the Sword, and it's just this very medieval kind of climbing guitar lines, and they're all like there's three guitarists in the band and they often just play together and just like triple up certain lines. And the intro goes on for ages before, because it feels like the song starts when someone sings with this particular song. It's not the case with every song, but with this one, when the singer starts singing, you go, okay, now we're into the song. But until that, it's people just doing this, and it's constantly building, and you're like, where's this going? And it takes ages, but you're not like frustrated by it sometimes. I feel like people build to stuff in music and never give you the payoff, and it's annoying, and you're like, just hurry up and start the song. But with this, it's like with each and every one, you feel like you're going into battle or something. The whole album, like on the front cover of the album, there's like a warrior with like a helmet on and a spear, and like a lot of the, there's a song called Warrior on the album, and like a lot of the songs are kind of conjure up that sort of medieval soldier kind of going into battle. And that last song, which I guess is just called Throw Down the Sword, is about, you know, stopping all that, but it still feels like you're going into, you're marching into this battle. And then it segues into this very quite calming verse. So it's a very satisfying introduction that kind of then smooths out and goes where you don't expect it to.
Can you, like, in regards to the way that the music starts, and, you know, with an intro and then the sort of journey that it'd take, and can you draw any parallels from, like, stand-up to that? Like, do you come on and try and sort of, like, grab them by the balls straight away, or is it, you know, do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, there's loads of different ways that people can, like, start shows, and definitely when you start off in stand-up, one of the things that you're trying to figure out the most is, how do I start, like, I've got to go on and, you know, talk to these people, but I'm not sure how. And it used to be that I'd go on and be like, how are you all doing, and like ask them how they were and stuff, and it just felt really artificial and rubbish, and I didn't like having to say hello at the start every time and be like, hi, and like, because I felt like I was being like, do you like me, immediately, like, are we friends and am I likable? And some people that really works, but I think it works because that's genuinely who they are as the person. And for me, I quickly found that, like, almost the less of an intro, the better. As I've gone on, I've been doing stand-up now for 12 years.
Yeah.
But the more it's progressed, the shorter the intros have got, to now I just kind of go on and start the first routine without any kind of introduction a lot of the time. I just, like, go in and a lot of gigs and just start the routine, and you realise people don't really need that from you. I went through a long period of just saying thanks, they'd applaud, and then when that died down, I'd go, thanks. And then like that would get far. But then, like, you know, I would kind of think, oh, that's maybe a bit Stuart Lee, or a bit Stephen Wright, or people like that. And, you know, so you try and like find your own kind of your own energy. And definitely, because I like music so much, I do think of it sometimes in terms of like how certain albums are like start, and that they don't, you know, try and work their way in and like fill the room out, and then they just go, here's the album and here's what we're going to do. So when you're doing a solo show, I think just going on and setting the tone immediately is more important than shaking hands with the audience and trying to be friends with them. But
yeah,
it depends what you're doing, really.
Okay. Track two, James, the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you.
Yeah. So for ages, I just listened to songs because I thought they were funny. Let's Get Ready to Rumble by PJ and Duncan and stuff like that. Songs that I thought, like, just that they weren't like comedy songs, but like they were just fun. And, you know, I was a kid, so like I was seven or whatever. So like, you know, you just kind of listen to stuff. It had to have something about it that was amusing. The Lion Sleeps Tonight is a hilarious song, but it's also brilliant. So like stuff like that. I think the first time I remember kind of being like, oh, this is actually a different kind of feeling, and yeah, what I'd call emotional, is probably Champagne Supernova by Oasis. Was probably the first time, like, for me, it's almost like in my head, it's like the original, you know, slow song, because like I hadn't really bothered listening to anything like that before that I really liked or resonated with me. But then that song, at the end, I was really obsessed with that album when I was like, I guess I was 10 or 11 or something, and listened to that album a lot. And I just thought it was such a great closer. And yeah, it did feel the first time I kind of was like, oh, I'm not listening to this for a laugh. Like, I'm kind of feeling a bit more than that. Yeah. And some sort of like connection there, which is, when you're that age, you can't really articulate what those feelings are.
So you wouldn't know what that in retrospect now, what do you think that emotion was?
It probably was nice that song made me feel a little bit sad in a good way, melancholy. So, like, I think that's probably still one of my favourite emotions, is melancholy. And, like, yeah, that thing of, like, feeling quite, like, reflective and a bit sadder, and that the whole thing isn't just this upbeat lark and it's a bunch of people having a laugh. It is a bit more contemplating. You know, you can just connect with that different part of yourself. I think sad songs I would associate more with emotional songs, you know.
Yeah.
Even though there's plenty of emotional songs that aren't sad, but when I think of emotional songs, I probably think more of like something that's talking about quite a relatable sadness.
Yeah.
That you don't feel as alone with it. Even though the lyrics to Champagne Supernova, I didn't understand them. It's probably the chords I was responding to more. I didn't understand what he was on about. I still don't fully understand.
Yeah, I have no idea what he's going on about in that.
And I knew that he was talking about drugs, which obviously I couldn't relate to at all. I couldn't relate to that now, let alone when I was 10 or 11. Maybe it was so, where were you when we were getting high? I was like, I don't know what that's about. I've never wondered where my mate is while I'm getting high before. So,
are you someone that if you're feeling melancholy, you go and reach for a Leonard Cohen album, or do you put on something really positive and upbeat to try and like change that? Or do you like to sort of, you know, enjoy the melancholy and soundtrack it with something equally as melancholy?
I think it depends if there's reasons for me feeling that way. If something really bad has happened, or, you know, upsetting has happened or whatever, and I'm feeling bad and there's something genuine that's provoked it, I think putting on a sad album is I just know it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Whereas if I'm just feeling like it for no real reason, it is quite nice to lean into it and go, well, it's okay.
Yeah.
Pretty much get out of this whenever I want. But like, nice to, yeah, put on a bit more of a sadder album, or often put on a bit more of a nostalgic album, something that, you know, one of my favourites, you know, like something that I would regard as a classic and, a, you know, quite a formative album or seminal album to me, and put that on and feel those kind of like, oh yeah, I remember where I was when I was listening to this, and like, oh, time passes, how sad. So like, I'm more likely to do that, yeah, if I'm just feeling in that mood for no reason. But if something bad has happened and I'm feeling bad, probably what I'm more likely to do is watch a really mindless sitcom, put on something that I don't have to think about at all, watch it and stuff. And then like, music wise, I'm probably more likely to try and find new stuff. And then the thrill of finding something new that I like music wise will cheer me up and get me out of that funk. Yeah.
Okay. So you mentioned Wishbone Ash earlier, and that was something that you heard for your dad. Mm. Was there a lot of music on at home growing up?
Yeah. My dad got quite a big record collection. I think actually when I was younger, at one point he sold all of his records and then had to build them up again. So he sold all of his vinyl, and then he had to build up some CDs and tapes. But as soon as I, you know, got into music and realized how much I loved it, I would just go through his library of things and try and pick stuff out and listen to things. And he would play stuff around as well. My mum would, I didn't have as big a collection, but would play music like loud in the kitchen or whatever, or wherever she was. Like I said, the kitchen, like it was this misogynistic household. That's just where the stereo was. So that's where my mum would put music on. But like, she would listen to Bruce Springsteen. So like, Bruce Springsteen is what I remember most from my mum playing, and REM is probably what I remember most from my dad playing in terms of like the things that I liked. So I'd listen to both of those quite a lot growing up.
What REM albums were they?
Well, he had most of them since they got signed to the major label. The ones that I remember listening to the most were Out of Time and New Adventures in Hi-Fi. But at that point, I was probably... was I a teenager when New Adventures in Hi-Fi came out? Maybe not. I think I was younger. But like those ones I listened to a lot. and really loved. And he probably played Automatic for the People more because it's his favourite one.
Yeah.
But I don't remember hearing it as much growing up, and I don't have as much of a connection with that album now as an adult. Like, I like it, and I'd put it in my top five REM albums. But
what's your number one? I'm curious. I'm a very big REM fan.
New Adventures in Hi-Fi is my number one REM.
Really?
Yeah, and, like, I mean, probably partly because it was what I listened to most growing up, but still now when I listen to all of their albums, I really love the sounds they've got on that record. I love the hooks. My favourite REM song is Ebo the Letter, and I just think it's incredible, that song. It's, like, one of the best songs ever by any band. And also, I read this book about REM, and I loved how they made that album on the road, and they recorded it in sound checks, and some of them are live tracks that you wouldn't know, and some of it in dressing rooms, and some of it's in the studio. And I just don't think there's a bad track on the album, whereas there's other REM albums where I can, like, go in and out of it. But, like, my, you know, I'll probably go that, and then I would say Out of Time. But then I would probably put, I'm a big fan, again, this is my age and just where I was when I was getting into them. And it's also, I think, the last good album they made, but some people would probably go before this. But I'm a big fan of Up. I really like that album.
Up's their Pet Sounds. I think that's their little nod to Wilson. I really do believe that. And it was the album that I kind of signed off with REM with, that one.
Yeah, and, yeah, I think that's a good point to go, I'm done.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. I think the songs like At My Most Beautiful and stuff.
What a stunning record.
Beach Boys, very Brian Wilson. Mm. And I like that. It was kind of the last time they were challenged. They were challenging themselves with every album they did.
Yeah.
And then that one was a massive challenge because Bill Berry left, and so they got in a drum machine, and I think they recorded it in Hawaii with a drum machine, the three of them. And you can hear them just, like, trying to make the most out of what they've got.
Yeah.
And that's a very sad album. It's probably one of their most depressing-sounding albums. And then after that, I found they just repeat themselves for a few years.
Yeah, I agree.
Back to their glory days. But everything up until then, I'd happily sit down and listen to. And, I'm trying to think now what my actual top five would be now that I've said that. But, like, anyway, yeah. But
I'm going to throw Green and Life's Rich Pageant in there for sure. They're my two faves.
Green is very, I definitely, that era of Document going into Green, of, like, signing to the major label, and the singles on those albums. I mean, Green would probably be my top five because it's got Orange Crush on it, and that's, like, the first REM song I heard. My dad put it on a mixtape for me, and I just thought that song was amazing.
There's a track on Green called Hair Shirt, and that's my favourite REM record ever. I think it's a beautiful record.
Yeah.
Okay, James, track three, the song that reminds you of your time at school.
It was the first number one that I remember. So the first song that I remember everyone talking about, it's in primary school, but it was Boom 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 by the Out Here Brothers. Was the first song that I remember everyone singing, also singing the dirty version. There was a rude version, so kids were like enjoying singing that, and it's the graphic as well, that dirty, but, like, it was not. I mean, I wouldn't feel comfortable if one of my mates now was singing it.
Yeah.
Like, let alone when we were all in primary school. But it was the first time I remember everyone in school talking about a song was that song. And also thinking that it was, like, incredibly catchy. And I tried to buy it, and the lady in our price wouldn't sell it to me because I was too young, which is the only time that's ever happened.
Did it have the parental advisory sticker on it then?
It did, yeah. But, like, I've never, you know, been checked for that before, but she was just like, can't sell this. She's probably 100% a Christian, but, like, she's just like, absolutely. But I just didn't get sold. So I think I bought, like, Big Yellow Taxi by Amy Grant, like a cover of that.
Yeah.
I didn't know what it was like. I just bought it because it was on the shelf. And I got in my head, I'm buying a single today. Which is still the case with me now. And it's why my life is extremely dangerous now that we can just buy music on the internet. Because any time I decide I'm just going to buy something, I just go on and then go on an absolute spree. But, yeah, back then, if I went to our price and I got it in my head I was going to buy an album or a single, if it wasn't there, I'd have to buy something else.
Yeah. Did you enjoy school?
No. And like, not for any logical reason. Like, most people don't like school because either they like, they weren't like, they found it's too hard or something, or like maybe they got bullied, or maybe like the, you know, there's just something about, you know, it's the nightmare and they were getting in trouble every day or whatever it was. I was actually quite a good kid, didn't get in trouble very much, did well in my lessons. Yeah. No one bullied me, like, you know, like no more than anyone else gets when you have like run-ins with some of the dickhead kids, but like I'd never have like, you know, never got bullied. But I just didn't. I feel I'm making more sense of it now as an adult, especially under lockdown, actually, of realizing how much I don't actually enjoy being in big social groups where you have to figure out how to behave, and you're constantly being like, right, that person's in the room now, and they're, you know, because even though I never got bullied, I'm fucking terrified of bullies. So, like, I was constantly, which is probably why I'm a comedian as well, is like that thing of obsession with being funny and making people laugh. It wasn't make them laugh so they don't hit you, but like, definitely that like, kept you feeling safe and in the, like, you know, people are laughing at me, I'm okay, no one's going to give me any shit. But yeah, I think I definitely overthought stuff in school and was constantly trying to keep on the right side of everyone. And I've only really got one friend from school I'm still in touch with, who I think was the one person who, when I hung out with them, I was just being myself completely, and that, you know, was cool and felt good. I felt relaxed. Everybody else, you know, I kind of felt like at one point that, you know, I had quite a lot of friends in school. When I was in school, I think I thought of myself as like, I've got loads of mates. And actually I didn't. I was just quite good at like keeping in with people. But
yeah,
the way people were in my school anyway, I found there was a lot of people who were, you know, I suppose kids in general, but they're quite keen to point out like those shoes are shit, that pencil case is shit or whatever. And so I was just constantly in my head about like not being called, you know, not being told that certain things I liked were shit or whatever. And so especially when I started, when I got into alternative music and I liked Nirvana and stuff like that, I started hanging out with the alternative kids. I thought, great, like this is it now. I'm free of all that. Like, not that I had to hang out with all the, you know, kids who were following all the latest trends and stuff, and they pick you up if your Adidas bottoms, you know, aren't as cool as someone else's Adidas bottoms. I don't have to do that anymore. We can just be ourselves. And then I realised quite quickly that's not the case. This other group has its own set of rules. Yeah. I was going to one of my friends' houses and I was wearing an Umbro t-shirt, and they were like, what the fuck is that? What are you wearing that for? I was like, I like it. It's a good t-shirt. And they were like, We don't wear that kind of stuff. The townies wear that. That's what we call them in my mind. Or trendies. Trendies and townies. They wear that. We don't wear that. And I was like, oh, fuck's sake. Like, this is the same in this group. And like, I thought, and you realise, oh, you're not actually genuine, like, people who like this kind of music and all this kind of stuff. You actually, you wish you were the cool kids. You couldn't be. And so you've formed your own subsect where you get to be the coolest kid in this group.
Yeah.
But it's such a headache.
Do you know what? It's strange though, isn't it? How tribal it was then, and it was this, you know, and it was the same, you know, 10 years before that, when, you know, in what was going on in alternative music for me and my kind of formative years in that as well, doesn't really exist anymore. There's not huge tribes in music, you know. I run an alternative nightclub, and for years when I was DJing, I could see the people that were coming through the doors, and I would see what they were wearing. I would know exactly what records to play that would relate to them. And you walk down the street and you'd be like, right, and I'm going to use some really lazy terms here, but, you know, that kid's into shoegaze, that kid's a grunger, you know, yeah, that kid's an indie kid, and you know, and all of them kind of identities have all just sort of disappeared, really. There's kind of like a united Top Shop window that seems to tick all boxes now, which I think, yeah, is, as much as, you know, you were saying like, oh, fuck's sake, now I've got to kind of work out what my grunge outfit's going to be now I've got into Nirvana. Yeah. But that stuff's gone. I do think there is a bit of a shame that kind of tribalism, like them youth cultures, don't seem to be as sort of defined in their outfits and their stylings anymore, apart from metalers. Metalers are just die hard till the day they die.
Yeah, they're doing, yeah, now you've just got Yeah, you've got hipsters, really. At that point, it covers all of it, which, you know, I definitely like. I think I liked. I definitely like it when people get into a style of music and they embrace all of that stuff and dress like it. I think I just hated it when they would then look at you and go, why aren't you doing this? Like, why the fuck do you care?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Like, we both like that band and neither of us are bad people. Can we just hang out and enjoy that? Because it's quite... I do like it. I definitely don't want everyone to be the same. So I do like it if you go in someone's house and whatever and, like, you can tell, like, their identity is everywhere and what they're into and and all that stuff. And that is nice. And it is a shame now in a way that it's almost the extreme version of that, where there is just this, whatever music you're in, it has to be one massive, you know, army of, we all dress like this and we all look like this if we're cool. And then outside of that isn't. And it can be all styles of music. But, like, yeah, that kind of, it just extends to that as well, you know, when, like, I've had many gigs as a comedian where I've gigged in places that are quite hipstery, like Shoreditch, or, like, you know, that's when you go to other countries as well, you quickly learn what the hipster part of town is. And I've said very kind of like sulky things on stage about how hipster the area, because I just don't like, you just kind of go, oh, fuck off. And it's not for the most of the reasons that people don't like hipsters. It's just like, it's just the coolness of it. People trying to be cool just really wears me down. I'm like, that's not who you are. You don't not care about this. Or like, stop trying to be cool. You're an adult now.
Yeah.
Why are you trying to be cool? Still.
What did you want to be when you was at school?
When I was at school, I wanted to be loads of stuff. And I remember telling my form tutor that when I was older, it was part of the lesson, and she was like, what do you want to be? And I said, I'm going to be a musician, an actor, and a cartoonist. I think I said those three things. And she said, well, you've got to pick one, and also any one of them is going to be really hard. And I was like, well, I remember just looking at me and I'm like, well, yeah, I want to be one of them, but, like, I kind of want to do them all. Like, I was like, well, right now, I play the drums, I really enjoy drama class, and I do cartoons in my spare time. So I'm doing all three of them now, and I'm a kid, so it can't be that hard when you're an adult.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't understand why I'm being discouraged. And that teacher actually showed up to see me on tour in 2014, and absolutely ruined the gig. She was drunk with her mates on the front row, and was just, they were just talking, shouting, putting their feet on the stage, walking around and shouting across the room to one another. And everyone complained afterwards about them. There was an article written about them in the local paper. And she refused afterwards to admit that she had fucked the show up. She contacted me on Facebook going, great gig. I don't know why everyone was so uptight. And I kind of replied, could you ruined it for everyone? They paid to see the show. You ruined it. And she was like, no, I didn't. And then eventually when the article came out, she admitted that she did. Because I didn't stop hearing from her until, like, that came out. She kept on replying to me going, do you know what? You're wrong. I did not ruin that. And I was like, listen, you're not my teacher anymore. You're both adults. I work in this industry, and I'm telling you, you ruined that gig.
Yeah.
And that's just what happened. And, like, eventually I had to just be like, here's... And that was part of school as well. I didn't really like... There were some teachers I really liked, but there were some teachers who I didn't like. And there's one teacher especially. I think I've spoke about her at length on a different podcast, but who took an active dislike to me. And she's one of the people that whenever I think about her, I literally want to be in the room with her again, so that as an adult, I can articulate everything I couldn't say when I was 11 and 12. I just say to her, like, here's all the reasons why what you did was really messed up and you shouldn't have spoke to a kid like that. But nothing. Every time people go, best years of your life, I'm like, well, I don't know how bad your life is now, mate, but, like, school. I wouldn't go back to school if you paid me. Hate it.
What was the first record you bought in a record shop, James?
It was the single. It was, so the first single I bought was Thunder by E17. I hadn't even heard it. I just bought, like, I knew E17 were, like, the cool band. In my primary school, most people talk about E17 more than Take That. Like, they kind of, they were, you know, E17 were tougher, that, like, they could handle themselves more in a fight. And so we were all going to E17. And so I just bought that single just because everyone at school was going on about them. Hadn't heard it until I got home and played it. Thought it was fine. And like, I think I got given albums as like presents and stuff, but I don't think I bought an album until I bought Nevermind. I think that's the case anyway. I think that like that was the first thing that I bought. Hello, Hannah. What? You're looking for some your work laptop. Not in here. I think didn't you leave it in the living room? she's gone. I don't think I bought an album until I bought Nevermind when I was 13. I think that's when I bought an album for the first time.
So let's talk about Nevermind for a bit then. I mean, for a first album, for somebody as well that, you know, you'd mentioned like the kind of disposable pop of PJ and Duncan and I guess they're out there brothers and stuff. Like, for me, I think Nevermind is one of the greatest pop albums ever made. I think it's an incredible record. And I know it wasn't one of Kurt's favourites and he's, you know, the Butch Vig production's been discussed and stuff like that. But I think in regards to, as a DJ, I can play any one of them tracks and it'll get a response. There's not many albums that have that. And I think that's just because of the quality of the hooks and just the pop sensibilities that Kurt had in his songwriting. Like, does that album still stand up for you?
Yeah, it's still one of my favourite albums ever. Like, I was listening to it the other day. It's sitting here. Like, it's... I just kind of got into, like, albums as a concept, I think. I think that it was around that time where there's loads of top 100 albums of all time lists on TV. They did, like, loads of top 100 shows for ages when Talking Head shows. And Nirvana were in there with Nevermind, and they showed a clip of them doing Smells Like Teen Spirit live. And I think I turned to my dad and just said, this isn't music, this is horrible. And then like within a year, it was like my favourite album. And I made the transition. I think Kerrang did a top 100 albums of all time list. And at that point, like I wasn't into that kind of music at all, but my friend Stephen Nichols was, and he had that copy of Kerrang. And so I read it and saw that they were number one with that album. And I was like, oh, that was in that show, that TV show, and now it's there. And I just became really obsessed with, actually, I need to listen to this whole album, which I hadn't really felt like that before. And I just really wanted to hear an album, even though I hadn't liked it the first time I heard a song from it. And I like the production on it. I think the production's great. Bold it is, and everything's like double tracked and stuff, and it's like quite a sweet quality to that production. Every single song, I love the hooks on it. I really now as an adult appreciate his vocals way more than I did as a teenager. God. I think the teenager I took vocals for like a good singer for granted, or listening to him now, especially when he's doing on like the live album, the Unplugged in New York album, and you go, his voice was incredible. Like, his tone was amazing, the expression in his voice, like everything about Nevermind I still love and still kind of like, and it takes me back, but it also, I feel like it's grown up with me, and it's one of those records where when I bought it, I think a lot of people were telling me, you'll grow out of this, like this won't be something that you like when you're older. I think I love it even more now because I feel like that connection's still there, but I understand it more now. I think it was quite a surface level enjoyment of the album when I first got it. And now I think, you know, just every layer of that album, I just kind of listen to it and go, I don't really know how they did this in a way. Like, it's so rare for someone to write, to reinvent like just the format of guitar, bass and drums completely with an album. And like, do something that other people get a sound out of that other people weren't getting, and write such consistently catchy songs for a whole record is also lightning in a bottle. I don't know how you even do that.
So
like I say, I like the production on it. I like the punchy drums, and I like that kind of, like, there's one of the songs that starts off with one of them doing that noise, and the bass kind of has that quality to the whole album as well. I can't say enough good things about it, and I think I've only loved it more as time's gone on.
Brilliant. So let's move forward a couple of years, James. The song that soundtracked your year's clubbing.
Right. When you said clubbing, is that...
It can be in indie clubs. It can be in rock clubs. Right. It can
be... Okay. Because like, okay, so... Because I thought, when it originally said that, I thought it meant me doing the comedy circuit, doing the comedy clubs, because I wasn't really much of a clubber. But I, for a while, we did attend, for a very like short period of my life, when I went and like would dance in clubs and stuff, like a two-year window, if that. And also, I wasn't drinking then. I didn't start drinking until like my late 20s, really, like in terms of like, you know, socially drinking. But before, I liked the odd drink, but I didn't enjoy getting drunk. And then I didn't. So when I was actually going out and dancing, I was always doing it completely sober and really enjoyed that as well. I think I kind of had a bit of a badge of honor that I was dancing like everybody else, but I wasn't drunk and they were. And I don't need it to have a good time. This is great kind of attitude at 18, 19, whatever. But I think around then, so Ketwin had like a few places where you go to the Prince of Wales most nights of the week, you know, most kind of Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Thursday. Like nowadays, you know, people in Ketwin only go out one night a week. And that's, you know, thanks to you know, how much the Tories have fucked everyone over and people can't afford to go out that often. But like when I was younger, most nights Ketwin was pretty busy, and if you were into alternative music, you'd end up in the Prince of Wales. Although I can't remember like specific songs that they would play that would be like, "Is it?" Once a month, though, there was a night called Kenny's Dead in a club called Club XS, which isn't there anymore. It's a car park now, but like it was originally, it's like felt like an airplane hangar, and the song, and I've talked about this on another podcast, but I can't change my answer because it is true. But the main song that like I would always associate with Kenny's Dead was New Noise by a band called Refused. And if you haven't heard Refused, their album, The Shape of Punk to Come, is, I think, an essential record. It's a experimental, like, hardcore punk album where they throw every single genre they possibly can at the album. And New Noise was a song that my friend Graham requested, and the DJ didn't have it. So the next month he bought it along with him and gave it to him. And the guy played it because it was someone's birthday, and then it became a regular fixture because everyone loved it so much. But what was great was it was a song that nobody knew. Yeah. So all the other songs he was playing were big alternative hits that everyone knew. And then this New Noise song, which goes through different passages of like a really heavy, like hardcore vibe into like an electronic kind of feel out of nowhere. And like, it was a really powerful song, really, really quiet passages that suddenly explode into quite like angsty, loud sections. And it was an epic song as well. It's like 6 minutes or something. And it just became this thing that everyone who went to that club loved this song, and probably outside of there, no one even knew what that song was. And yeah, every time it played, and also he played the song in its entirety, which includes at the end the singer just doing a bit on his own. I still, even though I've listened to that album repeatedly, I've got it on vinyl, it's one of my favorite records, I still don't know what the singer is saying at the end of the song. But he just going, yeah, 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 like for quite a long time. That's a very poor impression of him, but I'm not going to try and do a good one. But we would all just be there while he's doing that bit for a long time on his punch in the sky and doing the squawk along with him. Like, so that would be like the thing I associate most with being in a nightclub.
And that come from your friend actually burning the CD and taking it down there as well?
Yeah, came from my friend giving the DJ the song, which I think my friend had it on a sampler album. So it wasn't even, he didn't even have the album. I don't think he'd even listened to the album.
Yeah.
But he'd heard it on this one thing and was like, oh, this is brilliant. And he didn't buy the album. Weirdly, I ended up buying the album before him. So like, he was the one who got us all into this band, didn't buy the album. And then my other friend, Ben Foote, had got the album, put some songs from it on a compilation for me. And I was like, well, these other two songs are awesome. So that's three amazing songs I want. So I'll buy the album now. I was quite surprised. My friend Graham was like, oh, I actually don't own the album. I'll check it out as well. And then we all got obsessed with the album. But yeah, that song was like, he bought it there. The DJ loved it and played it every month.
That's a brave thing to give a DJ a record. I mean, it's happened to me. Yeah. I've maybe like in the 90s, I'd have like kind of like local bands giving me their CD saying, will you put it on? And I'll be like, oh, I'll have to take it home and have a listen first. And, sure. And a lot of the time it was really badly recorded. But somewhere, the only time it's ever happened where someone's gone, have you heard this? I've burnt it because it was sound good. Was, do you know To Hell With Good Intentions by McCluskey?
No, I know McCluskey. Yeah. Obviously they're awesome. But I don't know that song, which is, I'm very sorry, Falco, if you're listening to this. Because he knows that I'm a big fan of him. But I should know that song. Apologies.
You would have heard it, James. You would have heard it. It's yeah. Incredible. And I'd not heard of the band. And this guy went, put this on. Trust me. And I just thought, it was quite early in the night. And I was like, oh, fuck it. I'll just stick it on. And I was like, what is this? And then to that day, that tune, it was a bit of a big tune, but not necessarily right across the indie clubs. Like you say, it was one that people would come to my club and be like, can you play that song by that band? And I'll be like, I know what you mean. And like, yeah, absolutely. Hello. I've interrupted the podcast again, haven't I? Sorry, it won't take a sec. All I want to say is the songs that we're talking about in this podcast, if we can't play them, it's just because of the regulations regarding playing licensed music and such. So if you want to hear the songs, just go over to Spotify and search Off the Beat and Track podcast, and you can listen to all the songs because I've put.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Playlists up for each of these. If you can't find it on there, I'll send links on all the social media accompanying each episode. So you've just got to press that one button and you can go through and you can enjoy all the songs that our guest picks. Anyway, I'll shut up, get back to the podcast. See you on the other side. Track 6, James. A favourite song from an artist from your home county?
Yeah, there was a lot of... I was very lucky to grow up in Northamptonshire when the live scene was pretty vibrant and there was like loads of different types of bands playing at the time. And my friends were in a band called the Retro Spankies, who were really into stuff like Blur and Pavement, but also like weirder music as well, Poly Six and bands like that. And they were my first like friends to kind of have an album launch, and we all went to it and it was very exciting. And they've released two albums so far. I love both of them. One's called I Know You Are, But What Am I? And the other one is called Meager Vengeance. And I would say that my favourite song, but it's very hard to choose actually, because I do like both albums a lot. And I feel like I'm picking an album if I pick one. I think Hit the Electricity is my favourite song by Retro Spankies. And like, yeah, that's the one that I personally like. I saw them play it live for ages. It took them a really long time to record their second album, years and years. So it's a song that I would see live a lot and always really love it live, and was really looking forward to. I was pestering them for quite a long time to record the album because I thought, I really want to own that song. And I was quite impatient. And then eventually, like, when they actually contacted me, I think before they released it, to be like, here you go, so that I could have it, because I've been pestering them for so long. And it's like their second album is more, that they use more keyboards and synths than they do on their first album. But it's got this like quite upbeat, like lightheartedness to it, something like a sense of humor to it, a lot of their music, while also being quite, the vocals, like the instrumentals are upbeat, but then the vocals are always quite a bit more downbeat and sarcastic. And I really like how that rubs against each other like that. And like, yeah, that this song has a really good, just great breakdown bit, where just, the chorus is like suddenly halftime drums and stuff. It sounds really
wonderful. Well, I've not heard of them. So what we also do, James, is we put together a Spotify playlist to accompany this. So then I'll ensure that that's on there and people can go and explore that band as well.
I think that album's not on Spotify, but their first album is on Spotify. Okay. And from that, I would recommend, it's very, again, hard to pick a song I'd recommend, but because it's so many that I enjoy. The last track, Turf Not Tarm, is great because, again, that's one I really love seeing them do live, because the beginning has this drill sound on it. That live, the singer would have this electronic drill around his neck and would play it by, he would have to quickly move his guitar up to the drill and drill into the pickups so that you get the sound of the really good, but it's a very short little burst, and then he'd have to go back to playing his guitar. I always love watching that bit of their shows. So yeah, I'd say
perfect. The last track. I'll put that on there. Last track, James, and it's your turn to play DJ. So it's your opportunity to let somebody recommend a song that you think people probably haven't heard of that you would like them to hear.
Yeah, very difficult, because like most of my life, I think most of my time is trying to find songs that people haven't heard that I can recommend to people and making them listen to them and stuff like that. And I mean, the last few years of my life, I've been obsessively buying music from 2016 and discovering music that came out in 2016 and discovering loads of uncovered, you know, undiscovered gems, and trying to introduce people, trying to convince everyone that all this stuff is good.
So you've written a book about this year, right?
Yeah, I've written a book called Perfect Sound Whatever about my obsession with it, and I've got a podcast at the minute on BBC Sounds called James Acaster's Perfect Sounds, where we talk about a different album each week with a guest who is unfamiliar with that. I've sent them it in advance and they give their first.
Let's talk about that then before we get on to the track you want to recommend. So obviously not content with the hugely successful Off Menu, there's another podcast then. So is that just something that you wanted to do because of your love of music?
Yeah, like especially just my love of this 2016 project has been a really fun, and for me it's been like, you know, it started out when I was like having quite a rough personal year. So like I was saying earlier, I'm more likely to turn to new music at that point. And it was just suddenly reconnecting with modern day music, rediscovering my love of like new albums and instead of just buying old stuff all the time. And so I just feel like it's very personal as well. Like, not only do I love talking about music anyway, and I've always wanted to like have a radio show about music or a podcast or something like that. But on top of that, it's quite a personal thing, the whole 2016 thing. And also the longer it goes on for, and the more that I discover albums that I like from that year, whatever, it feels like quite a, because as far as I know, no one's done it before when they've gone, right, I'm just going to completely plow 1 year for ages and try and discover new stuff from that year. And the longer it goes on for, the more the feel of the whole project changes to this one of like because you're still discovering new albums all the time. They're just from that year, and people can get annoyed and be like, "You're still getting stuff from 2016." Like, but it's all different. It's all like, I'm not constantly buying stuff by one band. It's like, and I'm discovering that I like genres that I never knew I liked, and you know that there are artists out there who sound completely different to anything I've ever heard before. And doing a project like this, kind of, if you are someone who obsessively wants to find new music, it actually gives you quite a nice little parameter, but like it kind of narrows it down to, okay, we'll just do it within this 1 year then. But in a time, you know, the 2010s were extremely saturated time for music, so any year really that you pick from the 2010s, you're going to find an infinite amount of albums there that you like. And so, yeah, it's just great now to be able to do the podcast and once a week have a comic who are basically forced to listen to an album I like and chat to them about it. And I just love hearing people's takes on these records. As I'm not one of those people who's very, you know, you don't have to agree with me about it or like the album. I know that I like it. It's fine. I don't have to have everyone like it. So I love when people like have extreme reactions to them and what they made of it, you know.
Well, this podcast will probably be coming out in about probably 2 weeks. So by the time this comes out, what episodes will be available? What guests have you got?
So we've got Ramesh Ranganathan talking about Lemonade by Beyonce. We've got Phil Wang talking about the experimental punk hip-hop album United Dictators of Europe by Anarchist Republic of Buzz. We've got Sophie Duca talking about the punk, samba, jazz, fusion record MM3 by Meta. We've got Jamali Maddox talking about the black metal African American spirituals fusion like experimental album Devil Is Fine by Zeal and Ada. And I believe we've got Jen Brister talking about Laura M. Ruler's wonderful record, The Dreaming Room. So those are like the first five, I think.
Excellent. So if you had to, unless that's out weekly on BBC Sounds, yeah?
Yes.
Cool. So what track are you going to finish on?
I think because if I'm going to get people, if I want to get people into all the music from 2016, I would always, first of all, play them Just Like I by Zenya Rabinos. It's the song in my book that I say is the one that if I want to get people into the, you know, if I want to convince people that it was the greatest year for music of all time, that's where I'll start. I'll play them that song. It's a very immediate song. Her vocals are amazing. The vocal runs that she does on it. It's her approach to the album was that she wanted to sound a bit like a punk Beyonce, and that's very much what comes across in this song. The drums have almost a Led Zeppelin quality to them. The guitars are quite heavy as well, but it's still got quite a strong R&B influence running through it. I think it's a very special song. I love the energy on it. I love the sound of her voice. And yeah, I'd play that to kind of then hopefully, if people like that, that means they'll listen to her entire album, Black Terry Cat, which is amazing. And then they can roll from there to the rest of 2016 and all the albums that I like from that year.
Wonderful. James, thank you very much. I really appreciate your time.
No, cheers, Stu. It's been great.
Thank you. Thank you very much for listening. Well, that was nice, wasn't it? What an absolute gentleman James is. Huge thanks to Colette at BBC Sounds for putting that one together for us. Thanks to James, obviously, for giving up his time. And thanks mostly to you lot for listening. As I mentioned at the beginning, why not have a rummage around in the archives of Off the Beaten Track, see if there's any other episodes that take your fancy. And as I mentioned as well, we do have a Patreon page as well. You can find out about everything at offthebeatentrackpodcast.com. Thanks a lot. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I've butted in yet again. I just want to quickly tell you about this magazine. It's called Pod Bible. Now, Pod Bible is the new essential guide to podcasts. It's put together alongside Spotify and Acast, and it's a one-stop shop to tell you all about the podcasts you maybe know about, but definitely about a load of the podcasts that you probably don't know about that we think you should know about. I mean, in the first edition, there's interviews with Adam Buxton, interviews with Craig Parkinson, there's features on Jade Adams, and there's just an abundance of information about so many exciting podcasts that are out there. Also, Spotify have given us these amazing little codes. So if you do get a print copy, you can just turn on your Spotify on your phone, scan the little code, and it just automatically opens up the podcast on your listening device. How good's that? If you haven't managed to get a print copy, then just go over to www.podbiblemag.com and read it online, because the digital version is all over there and it's all free. So every other month there'll be a new edition out. So go and have a look and support us on the social medias as well. Podbiblemag.com. It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.